Good morning. It is time to get up with a new era in New England. And is it possible it gets better quickly? The answer is yes, and you'll hear why. Plus, speaking of replacing legendary quarterbacks, no more Tua. Does Nick Saban have his last best shot at a title right now? And if you were to redraft the entire National Football League, who would go first? Glad you asked, because we did, and the results are fascinating. They're on the way as we get up with you, starting right now. From Bristol, Mike Greenberg with you here on a Wednesday on Get Up on ESPN. We'll be with you for 2 full hours, and then First Take will follow us this morning at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time, and we will be busy. Let us start with Get Up and Go and take you through all the news from the world of sports. Starts with the MLBPA. Made a counter-proposal last night for an 89-game season with full prorated salaries and expanded playoffs. On Monday, baseball had proposed a 76-game season that would cover up to 75% of player prorated salaries. Jeff Passan will break down what it all means for us coming up here on Get Up. Meanwhile, NASCAR will allow a limited number of fans to attend races later this month at both Homestead Miami Speedway and Talladega Speedway. All fans will be screened before entering and required to wear face coverings, among other social distancing measures. Elsewhere, Dana White revealed on First Take yesterday that Fight Island is located on Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. UFC is planning to host 4 events there over a 2-week span, starting with UFC 251 on July 11th. Top-ranked boxing returning for the first time since the onset of the pandemic last night in Vegas, and reigning WBO featherweight champion Shakur Stevenson, the winner of the non-title bout, main event by 6th round TKO. And in tennis, Roger Federer's season is officially over. The 38-year-old Federer announcing he had another procedure on his right knee. He says he's looking forward to returning in 2021. There is a silver lining for his fans. The last time Federer missed time with a knee injury, he came back with a brilliant season, tore his left meniscus early in 2016, was able to bounce back in 17, in which he won both Wimbledon and the Australian Open. And on to the news of the day. More calls yesterday for the NFL to directly address Colin Kaepernick in light of Roger Goodell's recent comments. In an appearance on CBS This Morning yesterday, Malcolm Jenkins said the league needs to either apologize to Kaepernick or put him on a team.
I still don't think they've gotten it right. Until they apologize specifically to Colin Kaepernick or sign him to a team, I don't think that they will end up on the right side of history. At the end of the day, they have listened to their players. They've donated money. They've created an Inspire Change platform. They've tried to do things up until this point. It's been one player in particular that they have not, or that they've ignored and have not acknowledged, and that's Colin Kaepernick.
He created awareness for a situation that, you know, people, it's taken some time, but people are becoming, you know, more active in terms of their response to it. His, you know, protest is being heard at this point. It might have taken too long. And I think you should have every opportunity to have a job and to have a spot in this league.
Ryan Clark and Dominique Foxworth with me early this morning. Good morning, guys. And let's start there, because RC, this is obviously about something a lot bigger than any one person. It's a lot bigger than sports. But this is one very important person in the middle of this story. How important is it in your mind that Colin Kaepernick be handled properly here by the NFL and that he get another chance to play in the league?
I think it's extremely important. I think it's a part of that action, Greeny, not just your words or not just saying that you're anti-racism, but showing that you're anti-racism, not just coming out and saying, if you're Roger Goodell, that I protest with the players, but showing that the NFL is now understanding why this was not only a respectful protest, but a protest that was needed, a protest that was done for the right reasons. And I think owners understand that if you sign Colin Kaepernick, you now align yourself on the side of trying to eradicate social injustices, trying to stop institutional racism, systematic racism. And I still don't think that owners are willing to do that. There was a piece put out that said they thought they would lose 20% of the money that they earned if they signed Colin Kaepernick in 2016 or 2017, that is. And I don't think that was it. I think they were scared that by signing Colin Kaepernick, the circles that they run in would start to believe that they believe there needed to be a push for equality. There needed to be a push for fairness, that the black community was being mistreated. And I still don't think that owners right now are ready to align themselves with that. Roger Goodell added some pieces to what he said when he was forced to buy some of the NFL's best players, buy some of the NFL faces or faces of the franchise. The one thing he didn't say was Colin Kaepernick was right. One thing he didn't say was that Colin Kaepernick was mistreated. And I think that's what a lot of players need to see. And if you're truly changing the way that you are moving, if you're truly trying to affect change in the world, I believe for football, it starts with Colin Kaepernick.
Nick, as far as Kaepernick getting the opportunity to play again, is that a league issue? Is that something that Roger Goodell can really make happen? Or is this something that will specifically require one NFL team to make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, everyone gets to hide behind bureaucracy in this situation because Roger can say he wants teams to sign him, but he doesn't run the teams. GMs could say they want to sign him, but they don't know what their owner's going to say. And owners can say, I would be happy to sign him, but my football guys never brought that to me. But I think it comes down to a situation right now where Ryan mentioned that in the past, they tried to use money to explain why they wouldn't sign Colin Kaepernick. It seems pretty clear that the majority is on the side of Colin Kaepernick. So if no one signs Colin Kaepernick at this point, it certainly isn't because of his talent, and it won't be because you think it's going to impact you financially. Not that that was a good excuse to start with, but they can't blame it on that anymore. It has only to be that they are on the wrong side, that their actual opinion is conflicts with what Colin Kaepernick stands for. So I do think it will be great for Colin to get back in the league, to have this platform once again. However, I'm not sure if I were Colin, I would want to show up and give the NFL that luxury of rewriting history, and so that when we get 10 years from this and we look back, we can talk about the NFL being a redemption story and how they were wrong at first, but then they started to make the right decision.
Could you expand on that? If you were in his shoes, again, we're not going to try to speak for him here, but if you were in his shoes, what would you be feeling and wanting to do?
Colin's a better person than me. Maybe he doesn't hold a grudge and he is not at all vindictive like me, but now they need him. Like, y'all didn't want me when where y'all asses was at when I was talking about this real stuff then. Like, that would bother me that now you show up now when you need me, when my presence can make you look good, when my presence can put you on the right side of things, when my presence will get people off your back. Like, now you want to come and grovel and give me a contract. So that's me being petty. Colin probably has his eyes on a bigger prize where he can come back and use this platform to do something good and maybe even come back and have a great run and be a champion player, which would be a really cool end to this story. But I'm too petty for all that, I think.
Ryan, what do you think of that?
No, I think that Colin Kaepernick should play if given the opportunity because he deserves it. Colin Kaepernick gave up his livelihood. He gave up his career because he believed in something, because he believed in people, because he believed that black people should have all the fairness, all the equality, all the justice that everyone else here in America has. He has given enough. It was his dream to play football. He gave up his dream for his passion. And so even if it's a situation where they are concerned with perception or if a situation where they say they want to be on the right side of history, I don't believe the NFL ever gets on the right side of history as it pertains to Colin Kaepernick. You took prime years from this man. He gave up prime years for something that was bigger than football. And so if there is a team that's brave enough, if there is a team that understands they're going to stand in the room with maybe 30 to 31 other owners who don't believe that they did the right thing, who believe that they should have stayed on the side of wrong and not signed Colin Kaepernick, even though he still has the ability to play this game and help your team. If there is that owner needs to step up and sign Colin Kaepernick and give him a fair chance to make the team. And I believe that Colin Kaepernick owes this to himself to accept this opportunity, go out and show people that he should have been on this field for the last 3 years.
Let me add something else into this conversation as we're talking about the people who own the NFL teams. Richard Sherman did an interview. This was in the San Francisco Chronicle, and he was talking about Jerry Jones in particular, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the way they have handled this. And he said, it's not pulling them like it is the rest of the country, because if it was, then they'd speak. Jerry Jones especially has no problem speaking up any other time about anything else. But when it's such a serious issue and he could really make a huge impact on it with a few words, his silence speaks volumes. Dominique Foxworth, what's your reaction to that?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I'm glad that Richard is keeping this going because it's something that a lot of us have been talking about, but it sounds different. It hits a little different when it's someone in your league, one of the smartest and most outspoken stars. And I think he's absolutely right. This is a moment where you have an opportunity to be honest about what you really believe in and put your words and your face and your organization and your money behind addressing an issue that's been here for centuries, as many people are just learning in the last couple of weeks. So Jerry Jones is a perfect example, a perfect person to point out, because he's someone who is always looking for the spotlight when it can benefit him or benefit his franchise. He understands how media works, and he manipulates us and the rest of the media to continue to grow the value of his franchise. But now we have an opportunity to improve the values in this country, and he's sitting silently. And I've gone back to this quote a number of times, but I think it's appropriate. It's from Dr. King, that the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain silent during times of moral conflict. We are absolutely in a time of moral conflict right now, and anyone who is quiet at this moment, particularly those people who have all the power and who have benefited and built empires on the backs of black men, those people who are silent right now, they should be ashamed of themselves.
You know, Ryan, I've heard this said by many, that it is not enough for teams to release statements. The Dallas Cowboys did. They put a video up on social media and all that. But that's very different from the person who owns the franchise coming out and actually making a statement. Mm.
No, 100%. And I think we all understand, if you're Dominique, if you're me, you've been on the NFLPA. You know that it's not about the shield. It's about those 32 owners. When you are negotiating, those owners are sitting in the room across from you, telling you exactly what they feel about you and what they feel about your worth. Well, this is another opportunity. Jerry Jones is not only just outspoken about most things. Jerry Jones was extremely outspoken about protests, so much so that even his quarterback, who is black, had to come out and say, you know what, I would never kneel. This is not something I would do. That team basically stood against Colin Kaepernick, not only the NFL, not only Jerry Jones, but that team. And I felt like a lot of that was his influence. But Dominique used the word moral conflict. Jerry Jones doesn't have a moral conflict. Jerry Jones is doing exactly what we are asking people to do. We are asking people to stand up for their principles, to stand up for their morals, to stand up for what they truly believe. And Jerry Jones did that in 2017. See, for Jerry Jones to come out right now and make a statement and say that Black Lives Matter, to make a statement and say that there needs to be change in this world, I feel that would be going against what he believes. And one thing Jerry Jones has always told us is he ain't no liar. So he's not going to come out and lie and say, I stand where Colin Kaepernick stood in 2016. He's not going to come out and say, I stand where my players stand now as they lead marches and they lead protests and they lead rallies to try to bring unity, not only to our people, but to all people. See, Jerry Jones is doing what the owners do. Jerry Jones is focusing on him. Jerry Jones is focusing on the people that he cares about. And those people don't wear his helmet and play quarterback. Those people don't wear helmet and play running back for his team. Or those people aren't the guys that he's assembled on the outside to help Dak Prescott lead him to a championship. Those are the people that sit in the rooms that he sits in. Those are the people that gets to make decisions on what those black faces do. And so I'm not sitting here begging or asking Jerry Jones to make a statement because I don't expect him to. He's going to stand where he's always stood. He's not going to let the pressure of society, the pressure of his players, or the pressure of actual people making changes. He's going to stay where Jerry Jones is. He's going to be on his yacht. He's going to be rich, and he's going to be white.
I love you, Ryan. I miss you. This is phenomenal.
Guys, stay with me here. We have a lot more to get to this morning. We'll continue talking about this, and we will go on the field as well as we go. We know for sure the Patriots are going to have a very different look this year without Tom Brady. The question is, how different? We will get the answer to that as we continue in a moment. And then he was taken with the last pick of the first round 2 years ago. Where would Lamar Jackson go if the entire NFL was redrafted now? We did it. We'll have some fun with that as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, Do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Tom Brady joined the Buccaneers after 20 seasons with the Patriots. He is the first player in NFL history to change teams after spending 20 seasons with one franchise. And so as he departs, the new quarterback in New England, we would expect to be Jarrett Stidham. He projects to be their starter this year. Second-year quarterback attempted just four passes as a rookie, and one of those was intercepted. So that's where it stands as of right now. And according to ESPN's Football Power Index, the Patriots have a 40.9% chance of winning the division. The Bills have a slight advantage with an even 41% of doing so. Let's bring Mike Reese into the conversation. Mike, because you had a piece on ESPN.com that suggested that looking ahead, the Patriots offense might actually be better without Tom Brady. What in the world does that mean?
Well, Greeny, you know, talking to people around the Patriots, there's an acknowledgement that it's going to be hard to match what they had at quarterback with Tom Brady, arguably, the greatest of all time. But the thought process is that if they can just get solid play at the quarterback position and then improve in several other areas, the totality of the offense could be more efficient. And here's something for you. Last year, Tom Brady led the NFL with 33 throwaways. Now, that's not all on Tom Brady, but a reflection that the overall offense didn't always get what it was hoping to out on the field. So they hope that it's going to be Jarrett Stidham. He's been leading some of these throwing sessions that some of the players on offense have had here outside of Boston, and it's an approach that's similar to really 2001 when Brady was a young quarterback taking over in New England.
And so I think we can all sort of identify what some of the weaknesses were in that offense last year. What is the biggest strength of the offense looking ahead to the coming season?
Well, start with this, Greeny. They get their starting center, David Andrews, back, and every other offensive lineman is back. Every running back is back, and they traded up for two tight ends. So when you talk about a young quarterback maybe stepping in and replacing Tom Brady, this might be the biggest story in sports. How does that look? What's the best way to do it? Take some pressure off him by being able to run the ball. And in that sense, it again mirrors those early era Patriots championship teams when they had Antoine Smith at running back, Corey Dillon at running back, and they were taking some of the pressure off Tom Brady as he grew into the Brady that we've come to know.
That's well done, Mike. This really interesting look at what they have going on there. Thank you very much, my man. We will check with you. Now I bring my guys back in here. Ryan Clark is with us this morning, and a guy who knows the Patriots awfully well is Rob Ninkovich, who's with us this morning as well. And let's see if we have those guys ready to go here. Yes, we do. There's Rob Ninkovich, who was with us this morning. And, Rob, I'll start with you. It's the kind of headline that will get a lot of attention. Patriots offense better without Tom Brady. Obviously, this isn't about Brady as much as it is about the offense. Do you think it can improve in its first season without the legendary quarterback?
Mike Reese, I love you, but I just can't agree with that. The Patriots are better off without Tom Brady. Look, you had a Hall of Fame quarterback for a very long time. And in the quarterback position, if you have a great quarterback, their job is to make everybody better. Their job is to check the offense into the best possible play against the defense. And when you talk about throwaways, that just means that nobody was open and the quarterback was doing the smart thing and throwing the ball away. You get into a situation with a young quarterback, he might try and force the situation. And the number one way to lose in the NFL is turnovers. So if you don't take care of the football and you don't throw the ball away in the situations you're supposed to throw the ball away, you create turnovers, you throw the ball away and it's intercepted, or you throw it into coverage, it's intercepted. Look, that's how you lose, and that's losing football. So it's hard for me to think that the Patriots are going to be better without Tom Brady. Okay, you talk about running the football. Yeah, if you're not playing from ahead and you don't have the lead, you can't just run the football over and over and over again. You have to play from ahead to run the football. So it's just I don't think the Patriots are in a better place without Tom Brady.
I'm told we have Diana's audio issues addressed here. So, Dan, I'll come to you. What are you hearing inside the league when it comes to how other teams are perceiving the Patriots without Brady?
Yeah, going back a few weeks ago, I had one head coach in that division say to me, yeah, New England lost their prince, but guess who's still there? The emperor, that being Bill Belichick, of course. So no one's doubting that the New England Patriots are going to be able to do what they always do, which is figure out a way to be successful. But that being said, I did reach out to someone on the Patriots on the offensive side of the ball after I read Mike Reese's article about that maybe this team could actually take a step forward. And he said, look, Sidham is really good. He's mobile. And you heard Rob talk about this run game. Yes, that is bolstered up. But the best response to it was when he said, you expect us to have an offense that is going to be improved without the greatest player of all time? It's a little far-fetched. We can be successful, but we're not going to be as good as we were when Tom Brady was here. So pretty honest stuff coming from a Patriot.
What do you think, RC?
Man, I think everybody on here is being extremely nice to the Patriots. No, they're not going to be better. They didn't go out to get better. It's still the same wide receivers. And I understand that you say you can be a run-first team, but they had this stable of running backs last year. This team is not going to be better without Tom Brady. He's the greatest quarterback that's ever played, and even he couldn't make this offense go last year. And I think that when I look at Jarrett Stidham, I remember going into his last year at Auburn, they said that this guy could possibly be a first-round pick, and they would be Mel Kiper, Todd McShay. They said he had that type of talent. The two things I remember about Jarrett Stidham are when I watched him play LSU, he threw an interception to a great safety named Grant Delpit from the LSU Tigers. And then when they put him in the game against the New York Jets late in the game, he threw another interception to a great safety from LSU named Jamal Adams. So either they need to go out and get defenders that played for LSU to play wide receiver for the New England Patriots to be better at that position, or they are going out of their minds to think that losing Tom Brady in any way could make you a better team.
There's no way to follow that up. That's extraordinary. We will see. Again, Mike Reese's piece is recommended reading. It's very interesting this morning on ESPN.com. We'll take a break as we continue. Dabo Swinney made news this week with what he said and to some degree what he did not do. Did his statement go far enough? We'll talk about it as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Austin Martin, Vanderbilt University, and I play everywhere.
One of the most talented players in America, Austin Martin has played like a superstar here this afternoon.
How would you describe your competitiveness and where did it begin?
I hate losing more than I like winning. And that is a true statement. And it's literally in everything from cards to my family to board games, video games, doesn't matter.
What can you remember kind of like early memories, first memories of playing the game?
I was always the run of the group. I remember always being, I was the nine hole left fielder. That was my baseball position for, I couldn't even tell you how long. But my dad really kept me in it, and thank God he kept me in the game, because I would say around 11 or 12, I realized like, wow, like this is something that I would love to do for the rest of my life.
It's gone!
That is an incredible talent, Austin Martin.
Can we just touch on your salad for a second? Like, what's going on? The hair?
God, I need a haircut soon. You know what? I will tell you that, Jess. I need a haircut soon. I've always had long hair. I've never been a short-haired guy, but you know, you go into Vanderbilt, you're a freshman, there's rules and standards. And it took me a little bit to convince Coach Corbin to let me hair grow out. Trust me. And I still get crap from him to this day.
Can you just give me another little, like, what you just did? Right? Yeah.
That is Austin Martin, projected to go second in the Major League Baseball draft, which you will see tonight on ESPN. First round of the draft. The Detroit Tigers have the first pick. They're expected to take Arizona State slugger Spencer Torkelson. You can turn into first-round coverage tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Rounds 2 through 5 will be tomorrow, Thursday, at 5 Eastern, and that will be available on ESPN2. And with that, as we approach 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time here in the U.S. I'm Mike Greenberg. This is Get Up on ESPN. We're in Bristol, Connecticut this morning. Strange time for us. I mean, literally the time of day that we are on as we follow Korean baseball. So we will be with you until 10:30 a.m. Eastern time this morning. And First Take will air in its entirety, a full 2-hour First Take, starting in an hour and a half. Meantime, we will be busy between now and then. Let me get to some of the important news of the sports day, and it goes to baseball here. The Major League Baseball Players Association made a counter-proposal yesterday for an 89-game season with full prorated salaries and expanded playoffs. Indians outfielder Delino DeShields has this to say in the midst of this tug-of-war.
Every day I'm getting anxious, and I feel like both sides are just being kind of stubborn, but I know, you know, they're trying to just do what's best for themselves. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
So as frustrating as it is, like, you know, it is what it is at this point. We've waited long enough. So, you know, if we got to keep waiting until they figure it out, then, you know, what's another couple weeks?
That's one player talking. Here's our insider, Jeff Passan. Where do we stand, Jeff, and where's it going?
Not another couple weeks. Like, it is time to get this done. And I think that's the feeling of baseball fans everywhere, Greeny. And this is a step in the right direction. Remember, the players were at 114-game season before this proposal. So they dropped down 25 games. And we're getting to the point now where, as somebody put it to me yesterday, we're getting near the deal zone. Now, is there going to be a deal made? Tough to say right now, because remember, with MLB's offer, they were offering about 57 games fully prorated, and the players want 89 games fully prorated. Now you get in the middle of there, that's 73 games. If you want to play that many games this year, Greeny, you need to get a schedule done and a deal made quickly. 89's just not happening because MLB wants to end the season by September 27th so that they can play the playoffs by the end of October. I think if there is a compromise to be made here, it's going to be somewhere in the 70 to 75 game range. Otherwise, we're looking at a 48-game season that's imposed by MLB. And I think over the next few days, we're going to have a much better sense of whether that's going to happen or the longer season.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the players seem to want to come back and play. They want to do it on their terms, but they want to come back and play. The fans, obviously, maybe more than anyone, want the game to come back, but the owners clearly have hesitation about doing this in ways that do not benefit them. Is that the hurdle that needs ultimately to be jumped for this to work?
Yeah, I think if you look at what the players are saying right now, they are absolutely, completely immovable off of the fully prorated salaries. And that is, I just think, something that realistically the owners have to come to terms with. And the question for them is, if the players are on fully prorated salaries, just how many games are you willing to play? Like, let's just cut to the chase right now. Are you willing to go to 65? Are you willing to go to 70? Are you willing to go to 75? The sooner we get that answer from ownership, the sooner we're going to understand what sort of baseball season we're looking at. This is not a time to play chicken anymore. You've missed the 4th of July coming back, which was a golden opportunity. You've given up what seems like at least a month worth of games right now because neither side has done this, which they could have done 2 months ago having these discussions. But the reality is, right now, we're getting closer to knowing when baseball is going to come back.
All right, Jeff, I'll keep coming back to you. I have charged you with getting this thing done, and it feels to me like you're going to one way or the other, and I'll continue.
I'm trying, buddy. I'm doing my best.
I appreciate it. All right, Jeff, we'll come to you as this continues to develop. Again, hopefully one of these days you'll have the news that they are back and ready to start to play. Meanwhile, we will change the topic completely here. On Monday, Clemson head football coach Dabo Swinney defended his handling of a situation surrounding an assistant coach, Danny Pierman, who said a racial slur during a practice back in 2017. In case you haven't seen it, here was a piece of Dabo Swinney's explanation.
I would fire a coach immediately if he called a player an N-word. No questions asked. That did not happen. Absolutely did not happen. It has not happened. You know, there wasn't anything swept under the rug. There wasn't some dirty secret. We handled it head on. And also will say that forgiveness and grace, I think, is important. It's important for any of us. But I've known Danny Pierman for 30 years, and Danny Pierman is a good man.
That was a portion of that. We have Jay Billis with us this morning as well with RC. And Jay, I want to start with you. I know you had some reaction to how Dabo Swinney handled this, and I'd love you to share that reaction.
Yeah, and Greeny, this is not about Dabo Swinney's heart or his intentions. It's about his judgment. And coaches say all the time that they're about accountability and no excuses, no rationalizations. And that's all I felt that Dabo Swinney's statement was, were excuses, mm-hmm. rationalizations, and a lack of accountability. There was no expression of regret or apology for the way that racial slur was handled and the fact that it happened. I mean, just look what he said just right there, that if the slur was used at a player, the coach would be fired immediately. The fact that it was used in front of a player and repeated, well, that's different and resulted in no discipline. And he actually said in that statement that a story broke and it was not in context. Well, that's not true. The story was brought out by a former Clemson football player. And the mm-hmm. Clemson football player, Canyon Tuttle, was negatively affected and hurt by that, not just by the incident, but by the handling of the incident. And Swinney, first of all, he said twice, I didn't know anything about it. It didn't occur in front of the whole team. So the coach apologized and we moved on. And clearly one of his players, at least one of his players, didn't move on. But there was no expression of regret that was a hurtful incident or that it could have been handled differently and perhaps should have been handled differently. And I took exception to that. I don't think that was a way to show accountability, to show any regret, or to show an awareness of the sensitivity of the matter.
RC, you're very close to college football. While you cover the NFL for us, you're close to college football yeah. and around a lot of people. What was your reaction?
My reaction is that Dabo Swinney suffers from an enormous amount of privilege that he won't acknowledge. Dabo Swinney did exactly what Jay Billis said. He came on and he gave rationale and he gave reasoning and excuses as to why things were handled a certain way. He never actually put himself in the place of his players or put himself in those that oppose racism. See, I grew up in the NO and I grew up around white guys, and I always hated this term, white guys that they would say would act black. And those guys were close friends of mine, and we would hang out and we would listen to music that may use the N-word. And as they would rap the song, they would make sure they skipped over that. Or you even look at the way that people who are aware of certain situations approach them, and Dabo Swinney is not doing that. And so Dabo Swinney thinks that the way he handled this is correct because he's not listening. Dabo Swinney thinks that he is a good man. Dabo Swinney knows that he is a Christian. And so what Dabo Swinney thinks is, long as I am not racist, I'm a part of the solution. But that's not where you can stand in football unless you are anti-racism, anti-N-word, and for the fight for equality, then you are standing against it. And right now, Dabo Swinney has given us all the reasons that he is part of standing against it without even trying.
There was one other piece of this story that came up over the weekend. Dabo Swinney also addressed a photo that surfaced on Saturday in which he was wearing a T-shirt that read, "Football Matters." Here's what he said.
I had a T-shirt on that someone took a picture of me that asked to take a picture. And it's a shirt I've had for a couple of years. It's given to pretty much every coach by the National Football Foundation. And, that's been their promotional thing, I think, since all the way back in 2014. And I would just say any insinuation that I was trying to mock the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter movement, it is just an attack on my character. Just an attack on my character, and really sad.
Jay, what's your reaction to that?
Again, a stunning, stunning lack of accountability. There's no expression of regret for the insensitivity or lack of awareness shown in wearing that shirt, especially in today's climate.
Yes.
All it was, hey, it's about me. Sort of, it's an attack on my character, and that's really sad, basically putting on anyone who would question that. And the truth is, it was poor judgment to wear it. And it was poor judgment in his statement not to acknowledge that and be accountable for it. His program is being attacked. My character is being attacked. It's just this sort of excuse making and lack of accountability. And it shows, really, when he talked about the psych sit-in, the accountability is on the players. It shows that accountability is for players. It's not for coaches. And I just I felt like Dabo fell way short with his statement.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think Jay is spot on there. And what we're in a time now, we're in a time of intention and a time of intentionality. And I don't necessarily believe it was Dabo Swinney's intention to mock the Black Lives Matter movement. But I know it wasn't his intention to not do it. I know he wasn't trying to be extremely aware about the way that he moved, about the way that he showed himself, about the way that he was perceived. Because if your mind is truly on being a supporter, if your mind is truly on the young Black men that you go into the homes of their parents and says, I'm going to look after him. I'm going to care for him. I'm going to want the best for him. If my mind is on that, then I'm going to make sure I do nothing that stands in opposition of them getting everything that they deserve. So when Dabo Swinney put on that shirt and it said football matters, and when you win championships and when you beat the great Nick Saban, you are not a stupid human. Dabo Swinney is intelligent. He understood how that could be perceived. He understood how people could feel that was a way to mock what's going on in society today. So all he's given us is excuses and rationale, and now he wants to play the victim. That has been the life of Black people for a very long time. Excuses, rationale, and then when you lash out, we play the victim. Dabo Swinney is white privilege all over the place, and he's not holding himself accountable, but his players for things they had no control over.
I'll leave it there. Right, Ryan, thank you. Jay, thank you very much for coming in. I know you had some strong thoughts on this, and I'm glad you were able to share them. Guys, thank you both. We'll take a short break here. We'll come back. An entirely different story from college football. Tua Tagovailoa no longer there. Is Nick Saban's last best chance to win a championship at Alabama this coming year? We'll answer that question next.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
We're back on Get Up, and we are 80 days to the start of the college football season, and players are starting to report back to campuses around the country, preparing for a new normal and navigating the coronavirus pandemic and trying to play a full season if they can. And seeing Clemson with short odds may be the new normal for quite some time. Our friends at Caesars Sportsbook see the Tigers as the favorites to win next season's championship, followed by Ohio State, with Alabama and Georgia close at hand as well. And as Laura Rutledge joins us here, I've been saying to you forever, it's the same teams every single year, so there's certainly no surprise there. But it is a new era in Alabama as they move on away, you know, with a new quarterback. Now, what do they do to replace Tua Tagovailoa and try and get back into the playoff?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you, Greeny, that there were some sneaky teams out there right now that people were talking about to overtake these same teams that we keep seeing every year. That was kind of why LSU was so refreshing last year as a national champion. Either way, as you mentioned, Alabama's in a situation where they're going to have a new person as their signal caller. What does that look like? In fact, they have a lot of great options already on their team.
The Tua era is over in T-Town, but his impact won't be forgotten.
Tua throws, end zone, touchdown! Alabama is back as the champion of college football!
Tagovailoa broke Alabama's career record for touchdown passes and touchdown responsibility, leaving enormous shoes for the next type quarterback to fill.
As much of an impact as any player that we've ever had.
QBR says Mac Jones was the second best quarterback in college football the second half of 2019 when he was thrust into high-stakes action.
A BB of a throw from Mac Jones. Touchdown, Alabama!
That means Jones' total QBR ranked just behind Joe Burrow and ahead of Trevor Lawrence. In his last two starts against rival Auburn in Michigan, Jones was spectacular, throwing for a combined 662 yards and 7 touchdowns. So he's obviously next in line, right? Well, maybe. You can't count out incoming freshman Bryce Young, the number 5 overall recruit in 2020 with the makings of a transcendent quarterback. We all know Nick Saban isn't afraid to start a freshman at the position. I smell another Alabama quarterback battle coming our way. Buckle up, folks.
Gonna ask all the questions about it.
If I'm ready to tell you, I'll tell you. If I'm not, I won't.
So quit asking.
Vintage Nick Saban there, of course. You know, the interesting thing about Bryce Young is he's sort of an unknown and was an early enrollee and was expected to compete during the spring. Well, obviously that hasn't happened. Now, I've heard that everybody's really been impressed by his preparation so far, but they have yet to really see him in action. Either way, Greeny, people talk about how his anticipation is great. He's got the potential to be a generational type quarterback if put in the best potential position to succeed.
Now, and we know that Remy is a huge fan of the Tide, so that's why she's obviously so excited behind you right now.
He's killing me. Shut up, Remy.
Let me bring Paul Feinbaum in on the conversation as well. Paul, here's how I want to frame this conversation. Nick Saban will be 69 later this year. He is considered by many, myself included, to be the greatest college football coach of all time. But to put that over the top, he needs one more championship. Is this year his best chance to get it?
I think it is, and I'm sending some money to Laura right now to feed the dog. Greeny, 69 may not sound old in our business or if you're running for president, but it is old in terms of championship head football coaches. And I don't want this to sound blasphemous, but time is running out on Nick Saban. It's been 2 years since he's won a national championship, 2 seasons. That's a long time. He hasn't gone that far or that long at Alabama since the early part of his career there. And I think this is his best team. The season is unknown at this point. However, there are many other programs catching up a little bit. You can no longer make a blanket statement. Nick Saban's going to win a bunch of national championships. I think he needs to win one this year, or that hourglass is going to become very dangerous for him.
What do you think, Laura? Last year, in his own half of the bracket in the SEC, he was displaced by an LSU team that lost so much. Is he the favorite? Are they the favorite this year?
Yeah, I think Alabama is in a situation to be once again the favorite in the SEC overall and definitely in the SEC West. And I'm with Paul in the sense that it does feel like the hourglass might be winding down a little bit. But I do think it's important to point out that Saban's a guy who has consistently said as long as he's healthy and as long as he's still loving it, he will continue to coach. I think he's still squarely in that space in all of this. But I would say that he wants to win at least one more championship. So how can he do that and how quickly can he do that? To Paul's point, this is one of his best teams that he's had in recent memory. I think a lot of that has to do with the running back, actually, and Najee Harris. And I think you'll see Alabama in this quest to win another national championship under Saban get back to some of more of what they did before when they had a ton of success offensively before they had Tua. So really running the ball a lot more. They actually ran it a lot more even when Mac Jones came in last season, about 53% more than they did with Tua at the helm. So I think you'll see a more vintage Alabama team, and maybe that leads to another championship this year.
And let's talk about what that would mean, Paul. As far as the numbers are concerned, 6 championships means one thing. What would a 7th mean?
It would mean that he stands alone atop of college football, and it's not debatable. Paul Bryant right now is tied with Nick Saban, who when he retired in 1982, was considered the greatest coach of all time. Saban is considered the greatest coach, but there's one thing that Nick Saban has to be concerned about in terms of legacy, and that's the gentleman we were just talking about a minute ago in Dabo Swinney. Dabo's won 2 national championships. He's still very young. He's been in contention every year for the last 5 years or longer. And if Saban ends up at 6, it's conceivable that Dabo Swinney could catch him.
We will see. All right, guys. Outstanding. Thank you both very much for this. We look forward and hope that we will have indeed a college season to get to. And I'm being told, there it is. There's Remy. There's the
sorry, guys.
All right. Clearly something needs to be done. We will continue in just a moment. Coming up here, NFL players continue talking about the importance of getting Colin Kaepernick back into the league. We will talk about that as we continue in just a moment.